Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. The New York Knicks fall to the Miami Heat 110-96 in a game that was not as close as the final score indicated. And so, Alex, we're not going to talk about it that much.
Yeah, we'll talk about the game a little bit to open the show up, just get into what worked, what didn't. Spoiler alert, a lot didn't work. We'll probably try to focus on the positives, which, surprise, surprise, happens to include a lot of the bench players. But then we kind of took a little impromptu mailbag from you guys, asked what you guys wanted to hear about. So we're going to talk about Tom Thibodeau and the general ineffectiveness of his coaching lately, especially as it pertains to the rotations, because a large number of you wanted us to talk about that. Then we'll talk a little bit about Brendan Brown and how he's done as a color analyst, and end with a really bizarre and fun to think about mock trade to end the show. So listen to find out what that is. But we're getting into all that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I want to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today. And every day, we are now on YouTube. And you should know that at this point, because I say it every show. Please, please, please throw us a subscription if you haven't yet. We really do appreciate it. I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster. Currently, I went from high school hoops to Long Island High School Wrestling. It's a fun ride. He's Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the Strickland, the greatest Knicks website in the whole wide world. And we are here to talk about another tough night for the New York Knicks, Alex, a 110-96 loss in Miami to the Heat. We were talking about it a little bit pre-show. I tweeted out right at the beginning of the game. I think the Heat are maybe the single team most well-equipped in the NBA to expose every single weakness the Knicks have. They're more talented. They're more aggressive. They play harder. They play more together. They're better coached. It's just you can go on and on and on. But this was a game that was over, I think, about 2-3 minutes in. And it felt like teams that frankly belonged at two different levels of basketball.
Yeah. Can we talk about the high school wrestling instead? Maybe, I don't know, break down some of those.
I got some stuff, but yeah, we'll save it for the end of the show.
I don't know anything about that. Anything about high school wrestling, but I'd almost rather talk about it. Yeah. I mean, if you want to see, you know, just sort of an encapsulation of just how dominant the Heat were, minus Kyle Lowry, I might add, in 23 minutes, PJ Tucker, who I think was probably the biggest kryptonite to the Knicks in this game. And ironically, go figure, maybe the Knicks could have tried going small in this game and yet didn't, because they never do. But PJ Tucker destroyed the Knicks, went 4-6 from three, and was a whopping plus 37 in 23 minutes. I think that's about as good of an encapsulation of the game as you can get. When it comes to just displaying just how bad this game really was. I mean, realistically, the Knicks should have lost by about 30. They mostly only were able to get it to a minuscule 14-point deficit by the end, by virtue of the Heat throwing all their backups in the game and deciding that they didn't need to care anymore, something that is another thing that we never see Tibbs do. Speaking of things we never see Tibbs do, which we'll get into more in the next segment, you know, he was just extremely rigid with his rotations, with his game plan, you know, with keeping the starters in entirely too long, even when they're proving ineffectual. So we'll try not to talk too much about that this segment and save that for next. But, you know, I will say a lot of the guys off the bench, and also RJ Barrett, you know, I thought played really well in this game. RJ, 17 points, 6 of 11 shooting, 3 of 5 from deep. I mean, he had a really tough matchup with Jimmy Butler, and the Heat for all the Knicks starters, but I felt like almost especially RJ, because they were a team that recognized like how good RJ has been lately. They made nothing easy for him, and yet he still displayed some really good displays of tough shot making, I thought, in this game, Gavin, including like some threes with a hand very much in his face. you know, creating space for himself to get some other looks, getting to the hoop still and managing to finish there a little bit. Got to the free throw line for four attempts, even though his free throw woes struggled or continued where he struggled, only shooting 2 of 4 from there. So, yeah, I all in all, I liked RJ's game. I guess that's a good starting point, good jumping off point before we get to the rest of the younger guys on the bench.
Yeah, I thought offensively he was awesome. There was no question. I mean, he started off the game with 2 quick trigger threes. I think his release is maybe this is just me like desperately searching for a positive, but I think his release is getting like quicker and quicker. And he just finally, for the first time all year, just looks comfortable shooting from distance when it was obviously such an adventure to start the season. So that's a real positive. He continues to just show off more versatility and creativity around the rim, which to me, like if there was one thing I was looking for out of RJ this season, it was pretty much that. He's getting like really nifty at using like the wrong hand on either side. Like this game, it was a right-handed layup on the left side, so going against his strong hand, which is really good. Had a nice Euro step on Duncan Robinson in transition. I thought his best play of the game was actually a pass. Like when he got into the lane, got a step on Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo steps up, and he threw just like this underhanded lob. But with quarterbacks, they'll use the phrase like the amount of weight you put on the ball. The ball had the perfect amount of weight. Wasn't too high, wasn't too low. Perfect setup to Mitch for a dunk. I thought on defense, RJ sucked. Like I thought Jimmy Butler just bullied him. I mean, there's another play where he just made the wrong decision on a screen and gave Duncan Robinson a wide open three. But I kind of like the relationship between him and Jimmy. And this just seems like Jimmy's like personality sort of like he's kind of mentoring RJ. And like I'm sure we both remember that game. I can't remember if it was last year. I think it was 2 years ago where he was telling RJ like, hey, you got to kind of put your shoulder into me if you want to get separation like in the middle of the game. Which I thought was a really cool thing.
That was last year, for what it's worth. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Last year.
I think that was the same one where Jimmy did his exaggerated like fall down and act like he was dead, and then did the look up while he was on the ground. I think that was all that same game
in the Knicks Heat rivalry encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think part of that is like when RJ started scoring, Jimmy was like, "I taught you, and now you're using my moves against me," and got pissed and just started going to the rim on him. And still, Jimmy's just like. He's RJ 3.0 or 4.0 right now as a player. Maybe RJ gets there one day, but he had to kind of take a lesson from the master in this game. But Alex, I think there were more positives. Like IQ played really well. Obi played really well. Grimes played really well. Who else stood out to you in a good way?
I think Obi is the one that you got to talk about next. I mean, I don't know how he's not owed more playing time at this point. I mean, he got 21 minutes in this game, and it was basically only because Tibbs for once started garbage time somewhat early, you know, managed to find Cam Reddish a few minutes. Like Cam got in for 10 minutes, you know, quickly played 22. Grimes got 31. You know, Obi got time only because of how bad the starters were. But once again, you can draw this even distinction between Julius Randle, 27 minutes, Obi Toppin, 21 minutes. That makes 48. You know, I really wish that we could get to see those two together once or twice, because I think it'll help them out a lot for both of them. But Obi's just playing fantastic right now. I mean, shot making, hit 2 of 3 threes, which makes the second straight game that he's gotten hot from 3. 7 of 9 overall, 18 points, 5 boards, a plus 20 for the highest mark on the team in 21 minutes. I mean, I just thought that he brought great energy. He had, you know, a really nice, probably my favorite from him was he got the ball on the perimeter at one point, made a really nice quick decision, split the defenders, and just drove right in and took a one-handed dunk. You know, those are the sort of things that you like to see from him when he's playing in rhythm and confident. And that's not something that we've always been able to take for granted with him so far this year, because he's certainly gone through his struggles with, you know, his confidence and everything else. So I really love the game that we got out of him.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I love that he hit a contested three in this game. And yeah, I mean, the energy was there. He looks 100% back to full health. I think you did a good job summing it up. Emmanuel Quickley, and I don't want to get too crazy with Quickley, because a lot of what he did was accumulated after the game was already over. Someone who, and we'll maybe get into this a little bit more as we go on, against this Heat team in particular, I think it was insane that Tibbs didn't start
him over Kemba.
But I get that Tibbs is set in his ways, and like he's set in whatever the internal politics are of this team, and he's already kind of screwed around with Kemba. Maybe he doesn't want to screw around with him more. But this team so desperately needed Emmanuel Quickley's energy and his tenacity against this Heat team in particular. Kemba just looked dead to start this game and never really like woke up, or was never really revived at any single point. And then Quickley came in And he finished this game with 7 assists. I thought he probably should have had 10. Like he was throwing these great passes that just weren't getting paid off. Like he had a really good one against the double team to Grimes in the corner. Grimes missed the three. One of his better passes I've seen from this year, like a really slick bounce pass ahead to Burks. Of course, the layup was off. Another great pass. This time he actually got an assist off of it. Went cross court to RJ Barrett. And it was another one of those, like we talk about this quickly a lot, like when he's at his best pass in the basketball, like leading the offensive player away from the defender, and he threw it to a spot where RJ could catch it, get some separation and shoot it. I think it was PJ Tucker and RJ, and it was like PJ expected RJ to stay in the same spot. All of a sudden, RJ was 3 feet over, hitting a three in his face. Another really good play. And then late, just like hitting a deep three, like had a between the legs step back, really nasty crossover against Dwayne Dedmon, threw in a hesitation to end up making it an and one, hit a leaning jumper. Like he just aesthetically, it was a very, very fun game to watch Emmanuel quickly. Let's come back, Alex. We'll wrap up the positives, maybe a quick mention of Quentin Grimes. But before we do that, I want to tell people about Bet Online. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All you have to do is use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we're back on Locked On Knicks. Alex, I didn't think Quentin Grimes, I know he didn't really shoot the ball well in this game, but man, his hustle stood out and also his athleticism. I don't know if you caught that one rebound on offense where he just went flying through the air over, I think it was whichever Martin brothers on the Miami Heat, and was still able to save it. The way you framed it really well today, I think on the pod you did with Tony East on the Pacers, like he's a guy whose stats don't yet reflect how good he is. But I think it's very clear to anyone watching, like this dude is just, I mean, I know we always say it, but he's just going to be a player.
Yeah. And, you know, if there's one positive that we could take away from recent Knicks history, it's that at the very least, Grimes has fully snatched a rotation spot from Tibbs's cold, dead hands, you know, and his cold, dead sensibilities, I guess. I mean, I thought he was great in this game. You know, it's like one of those things. It's exactly what you just said and what I said to Tony in the, you know, the Miles Turner trade pod, like 6 points, 5 boards, 3 assists. Yeah, it doesn't look, you know, 2 of 6 shooting from three doesn't look like the best, you know, game in the world. Looks, okay, whatever. But his defense is next level. His hustle is next level. His just timing and placement is next level. Like everything that he does, he ends up in the perfect spot. Like, you know, for that rebound, it's like not too many players could have made the read of like, okay, I got to be there for that board at that exact spot at that exact time and time my jump perfectly that way. It's like he's got a very good control over his body and his physical limitations, whatever they may be. But to your point also, like he's flashing some athleticism and some burst and stuff lately that is really promising. He gets great elevation on his jump shot. So, you know, he's able to get it off with like an inch of space, which he did a few times in this game. And, you know, I love this game. You know, I, even despite the fact that he had the sort of shooting struggles and didn't wow you on the box score in this game, anyone with eyeballs could see that he was making a fantastic impact on this one. And I'm sure that he's going to continue to, but, I think we basically made it through anything positive we could talk about with this game, which, of course, leads us to the topics that everybody brought up to us on Twitter. We asked you guys, you know, hey, let us know what you want us to talk about, because we don't want to talk about just this game for the whole show because it's just not fun talking about a huge loss like this. And pretty much everybody pinpointed Tibbs as being the topic that they most wanted discussed after this game. More specifically, his rotations, his offensive system, the fact that Jeff Van Gundy publicly roasted him on the ESPN broadcast, apparently, which I didn't hear. I was listening to MSG, but apparently Jeff Van Gundy made a comment that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again regarding the starters and how bad that they've been playing this year, which is pretty tough considering they showed a little clip earlier in the game of like, oh, the Heat Knicks rivalry, and showed Van Gundy's 99 Knicks after the Allen Houston game winner, and Tibbs like freaking out behind Van Gundy you know, after Houston made the shot to, you know, basically win the game there. You know, so it's pretty tough criticism coming from his old mentor. And then the final thing that we got asked, which we could probably get to last, Gavin, is when would Tibbs hit the hot seat, or would Dolan interfere with how poorly the team has been playing lately? So I'll throw that to you, whatever you want to tackle first. But what do you think as far as this whole Tibbs thing?
Yeah, let's talk rotation a little bit, because to me that's probably the most frustrating part about all this. Like, because we can get into the offense a little bit. I didn't expect Tibbs to suddenly be like Greg Popovich or Monty Williams or like one of the better offensive minds in the NBA. I did expect him to maybe I didn't expect him to show flexibility, but it's weird because this was like a little bit of a conversation a year ago, right? But the two unit system, like, you couldn't really question it last year. Like, the starters, despite the Elfrid Payton of it all, like, fit together fairly well. The bench was one of the best lineups in the NBA a year ago. Like, it all sort of worked. So that was kind of put on the back burner for a season. And this year, obviously, it very, very much has not worked. I thought there was a great stat tweeted out by Fred Katz. He noted that in this game, like, Tibbs obviously didn't go away from the starters. And that lineup on the season coming to tonight's game was a minus 11.5 per 100 possessions. Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson. And despite being minus 11.5 per 100 possessions, they played the third most minutes of any lineup in the NBA. So to me, to Jeff Van Gundy, to you, to any Knicks fans with eyes, a heart, and a brain, that is a massive, massive problem. And it should be to Tibbs, too. And it's confusing to me why he insists on doing that, because I think we all agree that Tibbs wants the Knicks to win more than any of us. Like, this is a maniacal lunatic who very famously quit dating in his early 20s just to focus on basketball. Like he cares. It's not that he doesn't care. I think a lot of it is internal politics. I think a lot of it is just like his own predilections towards vets, like maybe having a greater mastery of his system on both ends. But to me, like, the way, and like that ties in with what I just said, like, the way to sum it up, like, I think there are certain things that he can't forgive, and they're the wrong things. Like some of the mistakes that Obi will make defensively in terms of rotations, maybe like some of the shots that IQ takes. And it feels like there's just a double standard. I can't tell if it's a double standard or if it's like the specific things certain guys are doing wrong. But it's so obvious, Alex, that massive, massive changes have to be made to this rotation. Like, I, for one, I would start IQ over Kemba. I would start Grimes over Fournier. I'd be more willing to play Obi and Randle together. All stuff we've talked about a bunch. What are the directions you would go in if you had some sway with Tom Thibodeau?
Yeah, I mean, what wouldn't I do at this point? I mean, I agree. Like, you didn't specifically say this, but you sort of alluded to it, was saying, like, you know, that Randle wasn't part of your, like, swap out of the starting line. I don't think Randle's fundamentally broken. I just think that the lineup around him is broken, and something is not working, and something is messing with him about how these guys are playing. And, you know, it leads to his confidence, his focus, his defensive ability coming in fits and spurts. And, you know, I think that part of the way to do it, you know, one thing that has been very consistent is if Kemba Walker is playing, RJ and Julius are not playing as well. And I don't know if there's some strife with those guys. Publicly, they'll say that they love each other, but what are they supposed to say? Maybe personally they do, but there have been, you know, I think everybody's had this at some point in their life. You know, sometimes you could be really friendly with someone, but professionally, you know, not like working with them or whatever, you know, maybe I just get the feeling that that's the case with RJ, Kemba, and Julius. More specifically, Kemba with the other two at this point, that something just does not work with these guys. And I think it's mostly that Julius and RJ like having the ball in their hands more. They have had this like burgeoning chemistry between the two of them that started last year and is now carrying over into this year. And, you know, at their best in these last number of games, they've really looked great together. You know, then the games when Kemba plays, that all just kind of seems to fall apart because Kemba needs the ball more and he's not as adept at doing stuff off the ball. Defensively, Kemba's getting toasted a lot, which I think probably affects morale as far as Julius and RJ are concerned, because at their best, they're both pretty darn good defenders. So, you know, that's the main thing. Get Kemba back out of the starting lineup. I almost get the feeling that the reason that he's even back at this particular moment is that the Knicks are trying to showcase him and trying to get something at the deadline rather than just buying him out. But at this point, just start sending tape of his 42-point game or whatever to everybody and just hope that's enough. Because if you want to salvage the season, I just don't think that he's the answer at point guard. I agree with you. I would definitely throw Grimes in the starting lineup, and that would probably come at the expense of Fournier. I would probably do Quickly and Grimes into the starting lineup for Walker and Fournier and call it a day. I think that would just offer so much more of what that lineup needs than what those two guys are offering at the moment. Let Fournier come off the bench, let him be a super sub, and come out there against bench units and just roast them on offense and not have to deal with so many situations where his defense is going to get exposed. So he could be almost like your, I don't know, Lou Williams or something, you know, like the guy that just comes in and, you know, can cook on offense and it doesn't matter so much if his defense isn't great. And then, yeah, start playing Obi and Randle together more. I just think that it should be so much more than just something that they only do if three of their centers are injured in any given game. You know, it's just I don't understand why they don't go to it more. It speeds up the pace, which, you know, Tibbs is always paying lip service to, you know, being conscious of the pace and trying to push the pace and all that stuff. So it allows them to do that.
Yeah. Wait, can I just say quickly, and the Knicks are once again last in the NBA in pace.
Exactly. You know, so like how better to fix that if you're paying lip service to wanting to play with more pace than to play your guy that plays like a wide receiver, you know, in transition and just is like he could catch a lob from anywhere and throw it down. So that would be one other thing. And then I think, you know, going forward with how Alec Burks has been playing lately, I would start working on phasing in Cam Reddish, phasing out Alec Burks, and maybe even phasing in Miles McBride for a little bit and just seeing what you got with those two guys versus Burks, and maybe try to look for a new home for Burks at the deadline too. That's probably where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I mean, just to circle back to everything you were talking about, with Julius, to me, like it's pretty obvious at this point. If he's your number one option, and he's not, he goes from last year, like for a high volume guy being like a fairly efficient player for his position, a very efficient player in some ways, to the least efficient, like high volume player in the NBA. And that's not like me saying that, like that's literally what he has been this year. You can't play him with the center if he's going to be your number one guy. Like it's not going to work. Like, when Van Gundy says like, trying the same thing over and over again and it not working and that being the definition of insanity, that's what Tibbs is doing. Like it's square peg into round hole, whatever analogy you want to use. Like it does not work because Randle, like he cannot bully his way to the rim. Like we'll see it occasionally. Like it's great when it looks good and like he gets a mismatch and he puts someone like under the basket and he dunks it. But for the most part, it's him driving into Bam Adebayo, trying to throw a lob to Mitch and instead throwing it off the backboard and the Heat running out and PJ Tucker hitting a wide open three on the other end because Randle and Mitch banged into each other. Neither of them wanted to like sprint their asses back on the other end. That play in this game like summed up the full Julius Randle experience this year. And to your point, that means more of Randle with Obi Toppin. And if you're not going to do that, then at the very least, you got to play him with Emmanuel Quickly and someone who adds like some verve and some speed at the point guard position, because what Kemba wants to do is like slow it down, ISO, like go around a screen, shoot some deep threes, like lull someone to sleep and bang a mid-range jumper in their face. It's sort of what Julius wants to do. It's sort of what RJ wants to do. Like they're just like, to your point, it's overlapping skill sets. And it's not that anyone is doing like anything wrong. It's just that Kemba Walker has been one guy his whole career. He's not quite good enough anymore to justify being that type of guy as a starter. And because of that, like it just doesn't fit because you're asking a diminished version of a star to play in a way he's never played before. And maybe in a year, like Kemba will be ready to just be like spot up Kemba. But if he's going to be spot up Kemba and he's going to suck defensively, then you can't justify starting him over Emmanuel Quickly. So you can logic this a million different ways, but it all comes back to the same thing. Kemba doesn't work with the starters. Randle doesn't really work with the center. If you're going to insist on playing Randle with the center, you better play him with a point guard that fits with him.
Yeah. And you know, the whole point of that too, and this comes back to, you know, is Quickly a point guard or a shooting guard? But the reality is he's sort of the best of both worlds. He's great in spot up situations. He's gotten so much better at creating, you know, for himself and others, particularly for others, that, you know, he can be so useful for Randle because then he now is, you know, getting so good at drawing defenders away that he could set Julius up for pick and roll, pick and pop situations on the rare chance that he's not handling the ball. But if Julius is handling the ball, or RJ for that matter, and they get inside and want to kick it out, you can always count on Emmanuel quickly to make that shot. Just like currently, you know, a little bit of cold spell recently aside, you could pretty much count on Quentin Grimes to make those shots too. So I'm with you, man. Like, I think that is the problem with Kemba. You know, they took a gamble. They said, hey, this guy got bought out. We'll throw him, you know, a low risk contract and see how things go. And unfortunately, it's just not going. You know, that's just that's the answer. It's just, it's not. And it's not going to work. And Kemba's, you know, basically got to go back out of the lineup at this point, or have some sort of recalibration where he can become a featured guy off the bench more so than a player that's starting and being expected to, you know, take reps away from better players in the starting lineup. And you know, that's going to require a lot of recalibration on his part. I don't know if he's got it in him. I feel like he's probably just going to go the route of, you know, another guy recently who was a Kemba Walker-esque player who had injuries and, you know, being slowed down sort of derail his career in this way would be like Isaiah Thomas with the Celtics. You know, I think that's kind of just the path that Kemba's going down at this point, where it's just like his body is kind of failing him now and he can't play as well as he used to. And, you know, his style of play is not conducive to being successful unless he's at 100% health, which he obviously is not anymore. So yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at with that. I guess if we were going to, I don't think we have to really talk too much about the offensive system either. I think that we've made our thoughts on that pretty well known. You know, it's just like, be better in transition, you know, run things through Randall better, try to space the floor in a better way as much as you can, even if you're playing a true center out there. Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any other quick thoughts on that before we move to the hot seat part of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off with the qualifier that they're better people than me to talk about that, because I can't say like I have a full comprehension of NBA offense and like what people like Monty Williams do that work really. I mean, you watch like someone like Steve Jones on Twitter like break down Monty Williams' offense, and it's like basketball porn. Like it's like they're just all these like options and like offshoots and guys like back cutting. And to me, my confusion with what's going wrong is it that Tibbs's system is just so rigid that you don't have that optionality? Or is it that the Knicks don't have players like, which is like the basketball creativity to say like, hey, I know like on this play, I'm supposed to loop around and cut into the opposite corner. But if instead I do like a little V cut and I end up at the basket, I'll have a wide open layup. And I think that's where my confusion lies. I think a large extent of it is that these guys like under Tibbs, especially this year, are sort of basketball robots. Like they have to be in their spots, like every, like, and maybe a lot of that is to make things easier for Julius. And we talked about this last year, like, and last year was such a positive, right? That Julius always knew where Reggie Bullock was. Like he could drive into a triple team. There's no way he ever got a chance to look, but he anticipated that Reggie would move 4 feet to his left and be wide open behind the arc, because that was presumably the pre-assigned read. So there's a good aspect of that, but this year it feels like there just should be more improvisation and it's just never there. Like even if someone would be open cutting back there, they're like, better not do that because Tibbs doesn't really want me to. So that is my very novice take on the situation.
Yeah. So we can move to the whole other part of it now. So
yeah,
two separate questions, or actually three people asked something along this line. When does Tibbs hit the hot seat / when does James Dolan interfere? I don't know. I'll throw that to you first. What do you think as far as what the timeline is for Tibbs at this point? Now with the Knicks three games under 500, a little over halfway through the season, things obviously not looking too good right now for their chances of doing anything more than like a play-in game this year. I don't know. Where do you stand as far as that?
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen until next year. If they come out next year and they're horrific, then I think that conversation will be a thing. I cannot imagine this. I just think this front office invested too heavily in Tom Thibodeau. They made him their guy. They've rebuilt the culture of the organization in his image, and it worked spectacularly well for one season. And even this year, the Knicks, I mean, since the first 10 games of the season, this was a stat in the Knicks Film School newsletter, they've been the eighth best defense in basketball. Like this isn't a roster that probably should be the eighth best defense in basketball. Like that's Tom Thibodeau. Like if you want to rip him for everything, you got to give him some credit for that. You got to give him a modicum of credit for playing someone like Quentin Grimes, who I think is a younger coach, like as good as Grimes has been, and as much as he's like a Tibbs type player and how he defends, I think he would have been getting 8 minutes a game as a rookie at most. Like he would have been a breaking case of emergency guy. So I know I'm grading Tibbs on like a baby scale now, and obviously there's a lot wrong here. I think I'm not at a point where I'm calling for his head. Like there are nights where I am and I kind of want to, but overall I'm not there. I think this front office is so far from being there. Like, I don't think it's a concern. As far as Dolan, I don't see it happening unless things like really, really spiral out. And given the Knicks' upcoming schedule, maybe they will. But I would bet Leon Rose, when he took this job, said, hey, if I'm going to do this, there will be bad stretches. You can't like go out in the media and like blow this thing up, because that's a detriment to everything I'm trying to build here and the image I'm trying to rebuild and the environment I'm trying to create that will eventually attract free agents. And look, James Dolan, like probably not the best at like keeping his promises or following instructions like that. But just given how quiet he's been the last year and a half, I think it's going to take something like quite a bit worse than this for him to come out and speak publicly. Internally, I bet there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, I'll briefly say with the Dolan thing, like, I think, you know, I don't think he would say anything either. I think that Leon Rose, more so than any of the execs that he's brought in, dating back to Phil Jackson, is the one that he respects the most. I mean, mostly because Leon headed up CAA, where Dolan's the Passion Project band is represented. So he had all kinds of interactions with him, clearly wanted him for this job for a while before hiring him, with the speed with which it you know, took hold and he was given the job and everything. So I think that Dolan's not going to say anything. If he says anything, it'll be to Leon Rose. You know, it's that he's not going to go public in any sort of way to intervene. So we'll never know if Dolan intervenes, I guess, is the real thing here. But yeah, the as far as when he hits the hot seat, it would take at least through like halfway through next year. You know, he's not going to get potentially fired this summer. My only thing is, I wonder if maybe there might be some sort of insistence, almost like the arrangement when Frank Vogel got hired with the Lakers initially, where they say sort of like, we're going to hire an even more high ranking assistant than like Johnny Bryant, who's your current like lead assistant, to be sort of your offensive coordinator, because we're not happy with how the offense has been. You know, I think that maybe there's a chance that happens. I don't know who that guy would be, you know, that you would hire to bring in to be that sort of offensive coordinator, so to speak. But maybe that's something that happens, you know, like just like Jason Kidd was credited a lot with the defense for the Lakers that first year. When he and Vogel were there, you know, maybe Tibbs gets his own version of Kidd hired, but someone who's more of an offensive mind. I almost wonder, I mean, it's wild to think, but I almost wonder if like Mike D'Antoni would potentially be a guy that, if the Knicks threw enough money at him, would come work with Tibbs. But there might still be a little too much sour grapes there between the org and Mike D'Antoni. But That's basically where I stand with that. I figure we can real quick just knock out the last two things here. I think you said that you watched mostly on mute for this game, so you didn't hear too much of it.
Tortured situation for any Knicks fan. My roommate had the Nets game on, so I was I was reduced to mute. Yeah.
So, we've talked about it before. What are your general thoughts on Brendan Brown, who's called the last two games in Clyde's place, sort of in an emergency capacity? I don't think Clyde has anything wrong with him. I think he just had to call out, so they've kind of called.
Didn't they say it a back issue? Or Breen made some reference to that. I don't know.
I didn't know exactly.
He couldn't fly because of that, I think.
Yeah. I thought initially it might have been because of the weather the other day at first, but yeah, maybe it's something with his back or something. Hopefully Clyde's okay. But anyway, Brendan Brown has stepped down from the radio booth down to the courtside level for, being a color commentator on TV for these last two games. He usually gets one or two opportunities a year to do that. What's your general thought on Brendan Brown?
Yeah, I think he's solid. I agree with what you were saying pre-show. Like, I think his basketball knowledge is unquestionably pretty good. I think his presentation needs to be a little bit better. The voice isn't quite all the way there. And I think he steps on Breen's toes occasionally, which is interesting because usually like radio is like much more of a play-by-play guy's medium, while TV's much more of a color guy's medium. But like sometimes like he's like I find him like recapping the plays, and I'm like, all right, just let Mike do that. But overall, I'm good with him. I think he's pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm a little more bullish on him. Like, I really like what he brings as far as his insight into the game. I think my main thing with Brendan is basically, it's like what you said, his presentation is not fantastic. Like, he definitely speaks more like a radio person, where he, you know, is, he's more like loud, I guess, in the way that he speaks, you know, and I don't mind his voice so much, but I just find like his general style of how he goes about presenting certain things, and like he ends on with like a big flourish sometimes, and it's just so such a contrast to how Clyde does things, where he
weatherman, you know, in a storm is what we were saying.
It's like a weatherman. Yeah, exactly. Like
he's getting blown there. Over by a tornado. As he's announcing.
Threes are coming down like crazy out here, Mike. It's insane. The Knicks are not defending the 3-point line well. You know, it's sort of like that.
You got to send someone in, Mike. You got to send someone in. I'm not going to make it.
Yeah, but I would say out of all the candidates available right now, he's probably the guy that I would say if Clyde had to retire tomorrow, I would most appreciate if they made Brendan Brown the guy, at least temporarily. You know, before maybe searching elsewhere for a replacement, but I would take him over Wally Szczerbiak. All right, this is our final one. This came in. This was just so out of left field that I feel like we just have to react to this, Gavin. Tony Knickknack at Tony Ark 637-50732. I hope that's not a phone number on Twitter. Had asked us, would you trade Randall Burks and the Dallas pick, which is the 2023 pick, top 10 protected, for Jalen Brunson and Kristaps Porzingis from the Mavericks?
Yeah, I would. I remember I was the KP guy back in the day. That would be the ultimate justice for my original reaction to that trade. KP sneakily, not sneakily for Mavs fans, but for Knicks fans who probably aren't paying attention, having a very good season. I would honestly, I would do that trade pretty, if I knew for sure that they wouldn't get Brunson as a free agent, I would do that trade just for Brunson. So I would do that in a second. And I think it would be hilarious. Like, the Knicks fans having to root for KP again would just be such a it would be fun. I think it would add some fun to a season that hasn't been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think at this point I might just say I'd take it too, just because I would be rooting for chaos at that point. So yeah. I'm with you. I just think it would be hilarious watching everybody talk themselves back into Porzingis again, having to go through all their tweets and delete all the bad things they've said for the last 3 years, whatever. Myself included, although I would delete him, I would just say like, whatever, I just didn't like him at the time. Now he's a Knick again, so now I like him again. It would just be kind of hilarious. So yeah, I'm with you. I would definitely take that deal. But I think that's it for this show. Thanks to everybody for giving us some things to talk about. When we asked on Twitter, it's always so nice when these games suck and you guys give us something to do. But we'll be back. We got a couple more great shows for you guys this week. I think we're going a 6-show week this week if we can swing it. So another game recap and another surprise episode maybe dropping tomorrow morning for you guys. So keep your ears out, and we'll be back in your feed a couple more times. Peace out, everybody. Thanks for listening.